Okay, so for our closing shiur, we're going to be looking at the last Mishnah and Gemara in our parak. We did a couple blot yesterday by skipping around, and now we're up to the end, more or less. Doesn't mean there's not what to fill in, but it's in Agada as to end the parak and the Masechta with a flourish, and there's a parallel sugya in Kiddushin and other parallels in terms of Acher. So we have what to work with. Someone want to volunteer to read the Mishnah?
Which one?
Yeah.
Okay. Lo yito adam in al banim afilu l'sahara semetzora. You shouldn't take the mother from the birds, even if you're going to use the mother to purify metzora. Umat emes b'kala shein keikar amar sora mani tala farachemim. Just as a mitzvah, an easy mitzvah, I think Rashi says,
Kisar,
is that you don't have to spend a lot of money on it? Was that Rashi?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, Sheinbach, Kisar, and Kis, Eldvar, right? Is a small amount of money. How are you spending money on the. Where's the money you're spending on Shiluch HaKein? So that's one possibility, right? If you would take the bird, you get a bird's worth of money. Instead, you need to buy a bird. Okay, that's that's an Isar, it's pretty cheap. An alternate explanation in source 5, or at least implied by that, and definitely Achronim as well, the Ri Milunel, Mamitz V'Kal Sheiki Isar, Klomer She'eno Mafsid Mimashe Matza Ela Ki Isar, in finding it, he only loses about an Isar's worth, Kishim Mishalecha Eim, Amr Tar L'manidach, etc. And then he continues, compared to other mitzvos, Motzi Mimashe Yigabo Yigia Rabba, Hu Motzi Elef O Alpayim, Alachas Kama V'Kama. For a big mitzvah where you'd spend through Yigia, what does Yigia mean?
Work
through toil, or you'd spend 1,000 or thousands, or 2,000. Then definitely you get schar. So we'll get to that in a second. But it's clear from his comparison to Yigia Rabba that we're talking not necessarily about like cash value that you're spending, but opportunity cost, right? The time you could have spent doing something else. So that's another pshat. You could say not necessarily the value of the bird, but the time you spend doing Shiluch HaKein is pretty negligible, right? All you do is send it away. We'll have some more thoughts on that in a second, but why don't we keep reading through the Mishnah?
Okay, how much more so for the hard mitzvah for Torah?
Right, so it's a kavah chomer, right? So if for a small mitzvah that you barely expend anything, you get leman yitav lach va'arachta yamim, it's good for you, you live a long life. Certainly for more severe mitzvos that you should be reward, you should get at least a similar reward. And if you just read this Mishnah and didn't know any Gemaras, what is the reward of Leman Yitav Lach V'Arachta Yamim?
Long life.
Long life, right? Good life, long life, live long and prosper, something like that, right? That's what it means in Pshat. We'll see, it'll become more complicated. Fine, so we saw, right, we talked just now about what's the cost, whether we're talking about actual monetary cost or tircha. Let's take a look at source number 6, the Me'iri, on our Mishnah, and a couple of other things, and then we'll jump to the Gemara, and things will get a bit more complicated. I'll read the Me'iri, and we'll get a volunteer for the Gemara. Mishnah Ashishis, right? The Me'iri always comments extensively on the Mishnah. V'akavana ba kikavanas mashi lefanav, v'odas gmul ha-misayim mitzvah zo. Wants to build on what was before. The reward for this mitzvah, right? You can't violate this mitzvah in order to do a different one. You go in the litaras mitzora to purify the mitzora, as we saw. You need two birds to do that. Kamosh biyarni lumala, right? It's earlier in the Gemara. V'amar achar kain al masha amra Torah b'mitzvah zo l'man yitavach v'arachti yamim. Based on what the pasuk, the Torah says, that it'll give you a long life. She ro'i la'adam li'izbonein kama schar tzafun l'mekayme mitzvos. You should think about how much reward people get for fulfilling mitzvos, right? This is a good place to think about that. Shal mitzvah kala she'emach zirankis el b'ke iser yiei gmul hatova v'arachas yamim. For a minor mitzvah, you get such reward. Uma gam b'acheros she'esh b'em tarach v'chisarankis. All the more so, just think about how much reward there should be for other mitzvos where there is a real investment of time and money. Right? He has both tarach and chisarankis here. And then he's sort of foreshadowing what the Gemara is going to discuss, as we'll see in a few minutes. When we come back, his buyer, big Gemara, shelo yahir adam al masharoa me heeder hasidur bein bnei adam. You shouldn't get too worried. You shouldn't think too much and get too worked up about what seems to be a lack of organization, right? Heder ha-sidur. If the world were perfectly organized, that would be maximal sidur. This is heder, lack of sidur among people. B'mevuchas tzadik viralo, right? The crisis, the challenge of tzadik viralo, why the righteous suffer. She'aschar amiti hu betachlis im hemshech ha-gmul af bebilti ha-tachlis ela shi'ar bevuhu lif'amim sivas ofnei mishpat behen ne'lamos mimenu. Fine. So it's, you know, the true reward is later, and also sometimes it's complicated how exactly to apportion reward, and fine. And then he gets again to the Gemara more. So that's, I think, helpful just in, on more or less a pshat level, setting up what we're going to discuss. So before we get into the Gemara and the Agadita, it's, I'm assuming people didn't get up to this in Seder, but there's a couple of interesting notes that we can make in terms of understanding Shiloh HaKein, the halachic aspects, things we've discussed before, based on this Mishnah that we saw, right? Because we just said it's minor tircha, right? It's not a major imposition to do Shiloh HaKein. So source 17, the Bechor Shor, early Achron, discusses a little bit the Gemara we did the other day. Ki kare, I think yachzor bahar mugvaos, and you don't have to. And jump to the last line there in source 17. Aval hashda detani lo yitol afilu letayres hamitzora, dainu afilu ledvar mitzvah. Delahachi kasav tishalach ve'ein tzarach lechazer klal baharim ve'ein kein shapir hava mitzvah kala. Right, our Mishnah says that our Mishnah, it's clear you don't need to do it to you don't need to. Right, you don't need to like. Well, I guess the main point is at the end that you don't need to go be mechazer, so it's a mitzvah kala. Right, you might have thought, what do you mean it's a mitzvah kala? Right, think about it this way, or the Chassam Sofer's formulation maybe is stronger. Source 18: Uma im mitzvah kala shu keiser shi keiser. It only costs a small amount of money. He says mikan yesh lochiach delo kechavos yair. Right, that we saw previously, the chavos yair, that there is a chiyuv to go looking for bird's nest, or at least if you know, see one, you have to go and do it. Why? Shafilu eino rotze lika habanim klal mechuyiv l'shaleach ha'em b'chol kein shiroa. You have to send away the mother anytime you see a nest, even if you have no interest in the birds. So that's really annoying. Let's say you live near a lot of nests, right? Your whole day could be taken up by that. V'im kein tzarach liz akiv midarko t'ilakai mitzvah shiloach ha'kein v'adahachi batil me'ashvakim. Right? Again, this is literally opportunity cost, right? You're not at the market. You're not doing business. So you can't. So it does cost you money. V'ika hefsed tfei tuba. It's a major loss. And fine is a parallel, a proof to that as well. But it's an interesting diuk from our Mishnah. The idea that we say it's a minor cost, a minor tircha. That only works if you don't have a mitzvah to go doing shiloh hakein at every turn. So that's an interesting point. And then the continuation, he actually quotes the tshuva that we saw the other day, v'tshuvasi asarti lemisha rotza lekayim mitzvahs hanal b'shabbos, that we saw that tshuva. So it's interesting. Multiple places he talks about it, but I thought it was interesting as it connects to what we just saw. Fine. So with that being said, why don't we move into the Gemara and look at the Gemara's discussion of how exactly this works, right? There's this great reward for the mitzvah shiloh hakein, and kal vachomer to all other mitzvot, but what is the nature of that reward? How does it work? How does it play out in practice? So do we have a volunteer to read that? Okay. Nani had her hand first, so, yeah?
There's no mitzvah in the Torah where it explicitly like writes its reward next to the mitzvah, that then the reward isn't like dependent on tchias amizim.
And what does that mean, dependent on tchias amizim?
That the reward is like not in this world, but in the next world.
Right. And right. So anytime we talk about a reward for a mitzvah, we mean tchias amizim, or you know, post. We mean not in this world, tchias amesim. What exactly, there could be two different things that tchias amesim implies or means, possibly. Yeah, Tamar?
Either Hazar or Moshiach.
Yeah, and different, Achron get into in different ways. I didn't necessarily put it on the sheet, but, or some of them are maybe later. Yeah, but so spell that out a bit. What's the difference there?
What's the difference?
Just spell out, what is Yemos HaMashiach, what is Olam Haba? Just to spell it out, yeah.
Like after you die, you get reward, or after Mashiach comes, when everyone comes alive. But according to Ramban, they're both the same thing anyways. So.
Right, okay, so right, so it's a complicated question. Anytime we talk about Olam Haba in the Gemara, or here even, it says Tchias HaMesim, but you can pull it in either direction. What are we talking about? Are we talking about some sort of spiritual benefit in a non-physical afterlife? Or are we talking about a reconstitution of our physical bodies after death? Which is what Tchias HaMesim literally means. So you might say that can't possibly mean Olam Haba, but the way people understand Rav Yaakov, some Achronim talk about that as being relevant as well. So at least we'll keep our minds open for different possibilities, but it's definitely not in this world in the physical immediate sense, right? Either Tchias HaMesim or Olam Haba. Okay, so all reward is of that nature. Okay?
So both by the Kodavim and by Shiloh HaKin, it promises like the reward is long life and like good for you. But we say Harisha Amar Lo Aviv, Allah Lavir Heavily Gozlos, the Allah Bashalah Hasaim Belokha Sabanim, Ubachazara so not all the means. But let's say someone's like father tells them to go up, climb this like to the top of a tower and bring down young birds, and he goes up and he sends away the mother bird first and then takes the young birds, and then on his way down he falls and he dies. So, like, where is this person's arichas yamim? Like, where's his long life? And where's the good that was promised him? So, it must be that, like, laman arichan yamecha really means long life in, like, the world that is all long, like, olam haba. And laman yitavacha also is in the world that's all good, is in olam haba also.
Mm-hmm.
But then we say, no, v'doma lo haba hachi. But maybe like the whole point is that that's not possible. Like it can't happen that someone will fall off the ladder right after they just did these two mitzvot that promised them long life.
Right, and it's actually pretty shocking that the proof that Rav Yaakov made until this point, right? The way we were reading the Gemara until now, it's like, hooray, let me make a thought experiment, right? You think that there is physical reward. Well, a thought experiment where someone gets punished instead of rewarded. Well, yeah. So the obvious response is that can't be, right? So how does the Gemara answer this?
So the Gemara says Rav Yaakov Maisa Chazal. Like, no, Rav Yaakov actually saw this incident happen.
Okay, and how does the Gemara know that there was such a story? Or where does the Bavli get this from?
Yerushalmi.
It seems like it, right? The Yerushalmi, which we'll get to in a few minutes, has a version of this story. So presumably, once you understand that, it's not some theoretical thought experiment, which could easily be refuted, but it's an actual story that happened. It happened at least once. And if this is a real principle in how the world runs, then that would be a counterexample. So it can't be. So that's Rav Yaakov's logic, right? So since people can be punished or can suffer despite having done the two mitzvos that are about the greatest reward, Kibud Av V'Em and Shiloh HaKein, maybe not the greatest, but it's most explicit, most very clearly mentioned. So it can't be that there's actual physical reward in this world for doing mitzvos. It must be talking about reward in the world to come. Okay, now we're going to try to refute that somehow. Yeah?
Yeah, so we say, V'dilma mahar ba'avira haba. No, maybe this person, even though they were going to do a mitzvah, they like had thoughts of an avira, so that's why they were not rewarded. But we say, no, machshava ra, ina kodesh baruch hu mitzar b'lamaisa, that like Hashem doesn't join together a bad machshava to the good action that you're doing. Like if you're doing a good action, even if you have bad thoughts, you're not punished for those thoughts and you're still rewarded for the action.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and the word mitzarfa is a little tricky. That, you know, the way you explain it is one way that, right, you're doing a good action, but with bad thoughts, the bad thoughts don't affect the good action. It could also be just, I think sometimes the phrase appears where you're not doing anything at all. You're just only having a bad thought. So at least sometimes you can explain it just as, it's like not mitzarfa l'masa. It doesn't like count as if it becomes a masa. It sort of remains as a mere thought that doesn't, that you don't lose points for, so to speak. Okay, right, so that's that wouldn't matter, right? If even if he had this machshava ra, it wouldn't have been reason for punishment. Okay.
So then we say, but v'dilma mahar b'avodazara haba v'chtev l'man kiposa spesis ra b'libam v'amar b'achavar Yaakov zu machshava b'avodazara. But we say no, maybe he was thinking thoughts of like b'avodazara because the pasuk says like in order to I guess catch b'nei Yisrael in their hearts, and Bar Yaakov says this is referring to like thoughts of b'avodazara. So are held accountable for Machshava, so maybe that's why this person was punished.
Mm-hmm.
So then we say, no, like, tahani levitagena la lo receive day here or belitza. So this is really what Rabbi Yaakov was saying, that if it was really true that there was reward for mitzvos in this world, then his reward should work for him and it should protect him, so that he doesn't come to have like these thoughts of avodah zarah and then get damaged as a result. So ela schar mitzvos b'hai amalaka. So it must be that there really is no reward for mitzvos in this world.
Okay. Great, so that's the conclusion, right? Because of this story is the ultimate counterexample to schar mitzvah b'hai alma, to reward in this world, and the fact that a righteous person or someone doing mitzvos can be punished and suffer as a result shows that you don't get rewarded in this world, you get rewarded in the world to come. And what we thought when we read the Mishnah originally, right, the pshat of the Mishnah, that it's talking about reward in this world, right? Pshat in the psukim, l'man yitav lach v'arach yamim, sounds like that's physical reward, living long and prospering. Kamash Malan, Rav Yaakov says it must be talking about in the world to come, in after Tchias HaMesim, not in our world. And we're going to push back on that now, but I think it was their hand. Yeah.
Yeah, so this assumption that like if you have reward, then it will stop you from having bad thoughts. Does anyone challenge that assumption? Like, it doesn't sound like, I never expected reward to translate to you will then be a good person.
Yeah, it's a great question. I didn't see anyone writing about this, but the way I was reading it was, since that there seems to be a certain assumption that like here her avera is not fully within one's control, or maybe not immediately fully within one's control. So if you're a good person, part of your reward is things that are out of your control that are negative won't happen to you as frequently. So I think that may be part of the implication. But yeah, it's a little surprising, right? Who says that if you keep mitzvos, you then don't need to try anymore, right? So I think because it's hear her, precisely hear her, that's harder to control. Maybe that's why it can be something that's rewarded. But yeah, it's a great question. Yeah.
Would it be that it stops you from being a koper, like author? Because then you see that there is like scar of onus in the world, and then you don't have God's blood walking there.
But I mean, how does that answer Devorah's question?
I'm saying, because then the hir hor avira could be like if there's no, I'm saying like if there is scar in the world and you get scar, then that would prevent you from having hir hor avira, because then you see like scar onish.
Meaning you're saying like a naturalized version of this. You would never have a avodah zarah, hir hor avodah zarah, because you see how the world works so well, and.
Well, just because of the offer example that's afterwards, maybe it was referring to that.
Right, it's interesting. Right, that's interesting because the Gemara, not our Gemara here, but the parallel Gemara in Chagiga, that was where was that? Yeah, source number 8 gets into right which maybe not avodah zarah per se, but by right. Shnei Rishrios, which is like sort of an option of avodah zarah. It's an interesting idea. Yeah, no, but it's definitely related. So that'd be an interesting reading to try to see this, thought of avodah zarah as somehow connected. That there's what to think about there. Yeah, interesting. Okay, any other thoughts or questions on what we've done so far? Okay, do we have a new reader for V'ha'amar, the last few lines? Okay, yeah. Generally, yeah.
V'ha'amar 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 V'ha'amar. So I'm going to say that people who are going to do a mitzvah can't be harmed. So
after you
fall off the
ladder and die. Now, if you didn't know the continuation of the Gemara, what might you have answered to this question, given everything we've said until now?
I mean,
the statement's
just wrong.
He wasn't going
along with that. Right, maybe like, does Rabbi Yaakov accept this idea that Shluchim Mitzvah Inizokim, isn't Shluchim Mitzvah Inizokim just another, like a version of Schar Mitzvah B'Hai Alma? So our Gemara obviously is not saying that, right? Our Gemara assumes that Shluchim Mitzvah Inizokin is not the same as Schar Mitzvah B'Hai Alma, right? Otherwise, it would have given that objection, which is interesting, right? And then you have to think about why exactly that is. Because I would have thought Shluchim Mitzvah Inizokin it's like a reward. You're trying to do a good thing, being punished, that would be unfair. But it seems like it's not that. So anyway, we're not going to be ma'ayin in that today, but it's worth thinking about why the Gemara doesn't give that answer. Why? And what in effect happens is, until this point, Rabbi Yaakov's argument was to say no reward, no reward, and now we're going to have to sort of back off on to some degree on a lot of the things to answer this question. But okay, fine. So that's Rabbi Lazar. That's a question we ask based on Rabbi Lazar. Shluchim mitzvah en nizokin. So how could this case be one where he was hurt, right? Even though he doesn't get rewarded for his mitzvos, he at least shouldn't get hurt while doing them. Okay?
Okay, so you said, well, there are some shiny. So when you're returning from doing mitzvos, that's different.
Right, on your way back, not. And why? Presumably, you know, if you're on your way to do a mitzvah, so dying would, or getting hurt would stop you from doing the mitzvah, and that's sort of not in Hashem's interests. So I wouldn't do that. Something like that. On your way back, it's already over. What's done is done. So then you can be, you can get hurt because there's no schar va'onesh in this world. Okay?
That is kind of like, you don't get a schar from doing it, but like you get help to do it beforehand, which doesn't necessarily mean the schar.
Right. At this stage, maybe that's what we're saying, but then...
But then we said, Amar v'Yolaz, Arshul Chemetzah, in Yerizok, and Lova, Lichatam, 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 Sar, Sar. So like, this whole statement is you don't get harmed going to the mitzvah or coming back.
Mm-hmm. And then you have to wonder, like, we have Gemaras where, like, carrying on Shabbos is mutter, and we say, on the way there it's mutter, we also mutter it on the way back, like, you know, so that you won't do it. Is it something like that? Is it an extension? Is it is the Chazarasan a reward? Because then it's even harder to hold up this distinction. Fine. But that's, you know, we're not going to solve that problem now. It's just worth thinking about that. Okay?
So it says, Sulam Ru'ua has Hava. So it's a shaky ladder. So in a place where there's a clear risk of harm, so that's different.
Different in what sense?
You're not protected.
Right. So the Nezokin is only true in like normal situations. In dangerous situations, then that doesn't work. Okay, and then you have to figure out what the principle is there, right? Whatever your theological principle is, in a Nezokin, unless it's dangerous, well, that sounds pretty pragmatic, right? So you get like 2 safety points, but not 5. Like, how does that, right? Is it a quantitative difference? Maybe it's something conceptual. Anyway, we're not going to solve it now, but keep going.
So Shmuel was going to, I think he said, anoint David. And he's scared that Shaul is going to hear and kill him, even though he's like going to do literally what Hashem just told him to do.
Mm-hmm. Right, so Shulchan Mitzvah can be Nizokin if it's dangerous. Okay, so we've neutralized the problem from Rav Elazar. Okay, and now something new.
So if only Acher had darshan this pasuk like Rav Yaakov, his grandson, did, he wouldn't have sinned.
Okay, yeah.
So what did Acher see?
Right, just to let everyone know, who's Acher and what's his story?
So Acher's Elisha ben Avuya, he was a Talmachacha, and then something happened and he didn't believe in God anymore.
Right, he went OTD, right? And the story is spelled out more fully in Chagiga, source number 8 on the sheet if people got up to that. But we're saying if he had only known Rav Yaakov's interpretation, who apparently was his grandson, that's like a plot twist, right? Then he would have been in good shape. Okay, so keep going. How does this work?
So some said he saw this case of that Rav Yaakov was saying, so he saw that happen, like someone was doing Shilachakim and...
Right, and notice, if you say that, remember, we said earlier that Rav Yaakov saw what happened. Now we're saying his grandfather also saw what happened. Probably it was a different story, because they weren't there to talk about it and, you know, hear Rav Yaakov's Chiddush. So, you know, it's a little dachuk to say that they both saw the same exact story, you know, generations apart. But okay, it could be. That's one Ikeda Amri. And what's the other Ikeda Amri?
Saw the tongue of
Rambam,
that was like in the garbage.
They didn't have nice garbage like us, you know, like the manure pile, right?
Okay. Amar Pesha, you think we're not this mouth that it's like saying jewels
will be in the. Right, and I think we say a line very similar to this in one of the piyutim for the Asar Rugei Malchus, right? That comes from this Gemara.
Why was his mouth in the garbage?
Because he was killed by the Roman army, and intentionally they degraded his body after his death. So that's right, and that's why he's one of the Asar Hrugei Malchus. So that was the reason why he became not from, not because of this theological objection of Shiloh HaKein and Kibud Avayim, but because of Rechutz B'Samet Turgman and his end. And again, a different theological objection, right? He produced so much Torah. This very tongue presented so much Torah, pearls of wisdom, and now it's licking the dust. Okay. So, what would have solved all of Elisha ben Avuya's problems?
Right.
Right, and whichever version you take of the story, whether it was seeing the person climbing up and right trying to do kibbutz avim and shidduch hakein and falling and dying, or whether you have the version of the story where it's Chutzpah HaMeturgeman, who taught Torah for so many years and then was killed and unceremoniously thrown in the dung heap, either way, the challenge is tzadik v'ralo, right? Slightly different versions of it. But if you think that Skar Mitzvah Hayal Naleka, then tzadik v'ralo is not a problem, right? He's getting rewarded in the world to come. As the Gemara in Kiddushin would say, maybe it's even better, right? A lot of suffering in this world, you get a lot of bonus points in Olam Haba. So that would have solved the problem. But what Nebuch, he never had the chance to have that conversation with his grandson to learn his Chiddush. He thought it meant reward in this world, and that's why he became not from. And on that happy note, we say Hadron Lakshu Hakim Islikala Maseches Chulin. It is sort of happy, right? It's a little hopeful, right? It's like an alternate reality where Acher had stayed firm, but it is still a little, a dark story that maybe had a possible alternate finish. Okay, yeah, question.
Yeah, I was just curious about the fact that, like, in Olam Kulin and in Kiddushin, it's like his grandson, but in, I thought in Yerushalmi, it sounded like it was like, it said like Rabbi Yaakov of Nimni.
Yeah, so there is a stira in terms of the relationship between Rabbi Yaakov and Elisha ben Avuya. The Bavli thinks it was his grandson. The Yerushalmi thinks it was someone before him. Doesn't say he was related. The Achronim point that out. I think one of the Achronim says, well, the Yerushalmi is probably right because the Gemara in Kiddushin says you're not supposed to have descendants if you're a Rasha. So probably he didn't have descendants. But I mean, that's not, I don't know if that's always true, especially given that Schar Mitzvah Hayal Maleka. So, but anyway, one of the Achronim, I forget which one right now says that. So yeah, it's a good you noted that. We'll get to that when we look at the Yerushalmi. Other questions or thoughts on our sugya, on our Gemara? So maybe we'll spend just a couple of minutes looking at the Yerushalmi. We're not going to look at the whole thing. It's a long sugya. As you might be able to tell, there's a very significant parallels between the two sugyas. But there also are some differences. Actually, you know what? Sorry to do this, but before we do that, maybe it's worth quickly, even more quickly, looking at source number 4. Where is it? Source number 4, the Mishnah in Avos. And especially the second line there, right? Rabbi Omer, Ezu der Hashar, Shever lo Adam, Kol Shi Tiferes lo Sever Teres lo Min Adam. Pick a nice path that's glorious. Okay? But then he says, V'havi Zahir b'mitzvah kala kivachamura. Be careful with a minor mitzvah, as much as with a major mitzvah, or a light and a heavy or severe mitzvah. Why? She'ena te'odea matan scharan shel mitzvos. You don't know how much reward one gets for mitzvos. And then he says, "V'amichashik hefse mitzvah k'neged schar schar aver k'neged hefseida." Also, even though you can't really know how much reward you get for mitzvah, still try to calculate that you get reward for mitzvos versus, sometimes it's enjoyable to do an avera, but you have to think long term about the punishments for that as well, etc. But this line he has, Havizar mitzvah kala kivachamura, she'ena te'odea matan schar until mitzvos. How do people think that relates to our Mishnah in terms of reward? Right, there's some similarities there for sure. Right, reward mitzvos, minor, major, yeah.
It's kind of like different approach, because like in our Mishnah it sort of sounds like, well, if like for a mitzvah kala you get this big reward, like kal v'chomer for a mitzvah chamura, whereas like this mission is sort of like kind of saying like, no, like you don't really like kind of like we don't really know what's like a kala and a chamura. So like don't think like, oh, this small mitzvah, there'd be a bigger reward for like a big mitzvah.
Right. Yeah. So both Mishnayos are trying to push and say there's a lot of reward for mitzvos, even minor ones. But there's a major difference in terms of like the epistemology of it, right? Do we know how much reward there is for a mitzvah? Our Mishnah seems to think, yeah, like we know, Shidduch HaKein is a minor mitzvah. And Kibbutz Avim is a bigger mitzvah, and there's other mitzvos that are bigger mitzvos and more major. Whereas in Avos, Rebbe in Avos really sounds like you have no idea. There's no way of knowing. So it could just be it could be a stira of some sort. One way out is to say that you can say in different places, kal and chamur mean different things. So you might say that kal and chamur isn't always about how important it is. It could be how hard it is to do, or something like that.
We were saying how with Rashi's pshat, it makes it like it puts it in terms of how much effort you expend, which is very different than saying one mitzvah is more important than the other. This is how Rashi takes it, at least. That's easier.
Yeah, if you say if you understand our mission as kala, just meaning that less effort, but not that it's more minor, then that works well. That would be a way of solving the mishnah. Yeah, 100%. So just wanted to put that out there because, you know, these both are important mishnayos in terms of how we think about mitzvos and reward and whatnot, but there does seem to be some tension between them, even though it is possible to resolve it. Okay, but with that said, let's move to the Gemara in Kiddushin. And as was mentioned, there's some significant parallels, but also possibly some differences. And the Gemara itself notes some of the differences between at least Rabbi Yaakov's take, which dominated our Gemara, versus some of the approaches here. Do people want to read, or should I take it? Do we have more Gemara volunteers today? Okay, Tamar, yeah. Why don't you start with the Mishnah?
Anyone who does anyone who does one mitzvah, it'll be good for him, and his days will be long. But no klasha aretz, he's going to inherit, have a nachal on the land. Rashi says that means olam haba.
What if you didn't have Rashi? What would you have just?
I would have thought that's not olam haba.
Right. Sounds like right. Leman yitav lach v'harachta yamim. Or some places, Al Ha'adama, Sher Hashem L'Kach Nosein Lach, right? It's like paraphrasing the Pasuk. You'll live long, you'll be well in the land. It sounds like it's in Pshat, just reading it straight. You think that means physical reward. But as you said, Rashi, and Rashi's based on the Gemara, says it's talking about spiritual reward. But well, Rashi, why don't you read Rashi's inside? Because both of them. Fine.
So that was another thing that you would think that the Mativin, maybe if we're talking about Olam Haba, but the Arutz definitely sounds like it's talking about this world, but in Rashi it's switched, because then it says, Benofalat Arutz, and it says,
right, so mitivin lo mashma b'hai alma. Right, so that's this world,
yeah.
And nochaz aretz is olam haba. Tamar, you're saying you might have thought it was the opposite.
I thought the opposite.
Right, okay. Although nochelas aretz, right, that's like a nachala can be understood as like a messianic idea. So maybe that's part of what Rashi was going for. But yeah, it's an interesting note. Fine. So that's our Mishnah, right? Oh, that you read the first half. Now read the rest. Right, and one of the things the Gemara deals with is like, this obviously can't be meant literally, right? You do one mitzvah, you get all the good things. And you don't do one mitzvah, you get all the bad things. Well, let's say there's one more than one mitzvah, and you do one and don't do the other. Well, then which one is it, right? There's like an obvious logical problem if you take it literally. The Gemara says it doesn't mean that literally. It means if you like, you know, either you do one more than expected, or you outdo the balance, you have more mitzvahs than averos. So the Gemara solves that issue. And along the way, right, the first thing the Gemara says, it cites this important brisa, or is it it's a Mishnah in Pei also, or whatever it is. Elu dvarim she'adam ochel peroseyam ba'olam hazeh, ve'akeren kayemes lo la'olam haba. Elu hein, right, so there are these list of things that you get, you eat some fruits, when you get some reward in this world, and you get the principle, the main part of the reward in the world to come. Elu hein kibur ava'em, ukumas chasad mechnas orchim avas shalom bin adam l'chaver, v'salam torah keneged kulam. Fine, and this is a slightly different version of this is in the Siddur to be said every day after Birchos HaTorah. But what's on the list and what's not on the list of things that you get rewarded both in this world and the world to come? Shiloh Hakim is not on the list. And what is on the list? Kibud Avaim, right? So that's interesting. And the Gemara touches on that issue as well. Fine, and then, you know, I don't want to go through too much inside, but one of the interesting points the Gemara has here is it talks about how there's this idea for Abaye, both Abaye and Rava, the way Rashi understands it, although there may be other ways of understanding it. There's an idea that if you get rewarded in this world, it actually takes away from your reward in the world to come, right? Which is, it seems similar to Rav Yaakov's view of Schar Mitzvah Hayal Maleika, right? Because you can only suffer in this world and be a tzaddik, and that makes a lot of sense because the real reward is in the world to come. On the other hand, right, so there's a bit of a tension here between that idea, and the Gemara ends up bringing in Rabbi Yaakov, but there sounds like there's a real tension between the Mishnah and the Brisa that are brought in here on Lamed Tes, which both sound like, or at least we read the Mishnah like Rashi, but certainly the Brisa, you get peros in this world, you get a Karen Kayemis in the world to come. It sounds like you get rewarded in this world, right? There is Schar Mitzvah Hayalma. And the Gemara says it's a machlokes between, right, Rava Amar Hamani, Rabbi Yaakov, he Amar Schar Mitzvah Hayalma, Leika, right? This idea that if you have more reward, you have more mitzvahs, you get punished more. That's Rabbi Yaakov. But that's a machlokes between that and this idea of getting rewarded in this world. So it's important to note this, right? That there's, even though it's presented in our Gemara as like Rabbi Yaakov, everything's Rabbi Yaakov, right? There's no reward in this world. But it's a big machlokes as is spelled out in Kiddushin Lama Tess, and machlokes comes up elsewhere. There really are two different schools of thought within Chazal as to whether there is Schar Mitzvah B'Hai Alma or not, right? And if you say Schar Mitzvah B'Hai Alma Leika, you solve the problem of theodicy. Right? Why do the righteous suffer? Because the real reward is in the world to come. If you think there is schar in this world, then you have to find a different solution to that problem. But that would be a different shear. So we're not going to do that now. Yeah?
If you say schar mitzvah b'chayal malacha, does that mean, like, don't think that there's, like, hashkacha pratis? Or, like, you just think that, like, Hashem is sort of, like, directing your life. It's just not necessarily, like, based on your, like, what you do. Like, how do you understand Hashem's, like, hashkacha then?
Yeah, well, definitely, like, if you, like, the way Rashi understands the Yom Tav, Yom Bish, right? That you have good days and bad days, where the good days are bad for you and the bad days are good for you. So that sounds like that's really Hashkacha Pratis, right? Hashem's going out of his way. It sounds like there's at least something going on there.
But that's also according to Rabbi Yaakov. Like, I thought Rabbi Yaakov wouldn't.
So, that's a good question. What do you do with Abaye there? That's an interesting question. So, according to Rabbi Yaakov, I don't think Rabbi Yaakov is committed to the idea, has to be committed to the idea that there's no Hashgacha Pratis. I mean, there's two different questions, right? One question is, I look at the world. I see there's injustice. I see the righteous are suffering. Right? Tzadik V'ralo, Rasha V'tovlo. So how do I solve that? Saying Schar Mitzvah Hayal Maleika solves that, regardless of the question, in theory, right? Regardless of the question of Hashgacha Pratis, Klalis, or otherwise. Presumably, if you say there's no Hashgacha Pratis, that would fit well with Schar Mitzvah Hayal Maleika, right? But I don't know if it has to go the other way.
Right, yeah, I don't feel like it has to go the other way. I'm just curious how, like, you understand what the nature of Hashgacha is if it's not based on, like, our actions.
Maybe Hashgacha is, right, Hashgacha could be not in the sense of reward, but in the sense of, you know, leading history in a certain direction,
right.
Or keeping track, keeping score in this world for the Schar in the world to come. I think there's room for different views here, and I'm sure, you know, you can sort of take the different, that'd be an interesting project, go through the different medieval philosophers who have different views on Hashgacha Pratis and Klalis, and different views on Schar Mitzvah, and sort of plot out the shitos. So, yeah, that, I'll leave that as an exercise to the questioner. That'd be interesting to look into. Other questions? I see that were there hands? Or, yeah, no? Okay, so that's a lot of the Gemara here. And we, of course, towards the bottom of Lama Testament Beis, it has the same point from Rav Yosef, mentioning the story with Acher and whatnot. But let's jump now to Mem Amud Aleph, the two dots on the fourth mid-width line. People have that. Rami Le Rava L'Rav Nachman. On the other handout, it's somewhere. I don't know. Everybody has the other sheet? Okay, good. So Rami Le Rava L'Rav Nachman. Rava sets up a contradiction before Rav Nachman. Tnan, Elu Dvarim She'Adam Oseh Oso Ve'Ochel Yerseim Ba'Olam Hazeh Ve'Karan Kemes La'Olam Haba. We read this before. You get rewarded both in this world and the world to come. Elu Ein Kibud Havei Emigum Eschasadim Havas Shalom Bein Adam L'Chaver V'Sal B'Torah K'Neged Kulam. This whole list of things. Kibud Havei Em, Chesed, making Shalom, and learning Torah. Right? And B'Kibud Havei Em K'siv L'man Yerichon Yomecha L'man Yitav Lach. Right? It's clear from Kibud Havei Em, it's a double reward. Long days and good. So that's the two worlds. Right, in all these cases, there's a dual reward. But then we have a question, right? Given the drasha we had for Kibud Havei Em, that it says two things, you know, yitav yarich on yamecha and yitav lach. So we have the same thing by Shiloh HaKeim. Shiloh HaKeim nami ksiv, leman yitav lach, varachta yamim, listni nami, ha. Right, why do we leave Shiloh HaKeim off the list of things that you get this double reward? Again, that would, if you did that, if you put it on the list, that would be exactly against our Mishnah in Chulin, right? Because it would say you get reward both in this world and the world to come. And we say, Tana Vashir, yeah, it really belongs on the list, but we left it off for some reason. And so we say, Tani Tana, Elu Dvarim, Va'at Amr, Tana Vashir. No, it says these are the things, right? It sounds like it's a very specific list. You can't just say it left it off. That's not a good answer. So that has to be a reason why it left it off. Amar Rava, Rav Idi Asperli. Rav Idi explained as follows. Imrut Tzadik Kitov, Kifri Ma'aleim Yochelu. Right, say it, Tzadik is good, they eat the fruits of their labor. Chiyesh Tzadik Tov, Yesh Tzadik She'eno Tov. Is there a good Tzadik and a bad Tzadik, or a non-good Tzadik? Ela Tov, L'Shamayim Vila Brios, Zeu Tzadik Tov. Tov L'Shamayim Vira L'Brios, Zeu Tzadik She'eno Tov. Well, there are some Tzadikim who are good for God and not good to other people. That's one type of Tzadik. And then there's a Tzadik who's actually good to people as well. What does that have to do with anything? So you look in Rashi, Rav Idi Asperli, Eno domet le'elu dehanach. Sorry, le'elu dehanach, kulu habrios nen in mimenu, v'nimtza tov l'shamayim v'tov l'brios. This list, right, kibbut ava'im, k'minus chasadim havashim, v'adim l'chaveru, Talmud Torah, that's good for the person doing the mitzvah and for others. Right, you could say their mitzvah being adam l'chaveru to one degree or another, they help people. V'huksiv kifri ma'aleim yochelu. Then you get your reward in this world. De'bahai kruksiv kitov, kifri ma'alav yochel b'chayav. You get rewarded in this world if you're doing something that's good for others. Avol b'shiloch hakein tov l'shamayim hu, ve'ein kan tov l'brios. Shiloch hakein doesn't help other people. Now he uses the word brios. Brios literally means creations, right? So I mean, birds were created too, right? There's a pasuk that says that, I think. So, whatever, that's not what brios means. Brios means people, right? Doing Shiloh HaKeim doesn't help other people. V'lo ksiv be kifri ma'alav yochel, that pasuk wouldn't apply. V'hilkach, lo tanye gami ochel b'yosim ba'olam hazeh. Therefore, you don't receive your fruits of your labor in this world. The way Rashi understands it is actually very interesting. It's somewhat of a compromise view between Rabbi Yaakov and the other view, the Braisa, right? That Shiloh HaKeim in particular, because it doesn't help other people, you only get rewarded in Olam Haba. Whereas in general, we say there is schar in this world, right? That there is that view, but for Shiloh HaKeim, it wouldn't apply. You probably could read the Gemara not like Rashi, right? You could read the Gemara saying, this is why it's not on the list, because it doesn't help other people, but you do still get schar in Olam Haba. So Rashi seems to be going out of his way to say that it's like a crossover mitzvah, which is interesting and worth thinking about, and there's some mikoros that we're not going to get to that talk about that a bit more, what the interplay is and the relationship is between Shiloh HaKeim and Kibbut Ava'im. But what I'd like to do with our remaining time is, you know, having seen some of the more important points in Kiddushin, I'd like to look at the Yerushalmi. I think the very interesting version of the same story with Acher, with a lot of fascinating details. So I think we'll spend a few minutes on that and try to understand this Agadah a little better. Right, source number 7 on the sheet. And this is in Chagiga, right? Perek Beis of Chagiga, right where the Bavli, the same place where the Bavli has the discussion. The Yerushalmi preceded it. So let's take a look. And keep in mind both the story internally itself, but also whether it's similar to or different than the story in the Bavli in various ways. So Pam Achas, right? One time, Hayayoshe Vishone Bivikas Ginosar. We're talking about Acher. We're talking about Elisha ben Avuya here, right? He was sitting in the valley of Ginosar, and Vira Adam Echad, Ola L'Rosh HaDekel. He sees a person go up to the top of a palm tree. Okay, it's not a bira, it's a dekel. That's not a huge difference. V'natal Eimal Abanim. He takes the mother while the kids are still there. V'yarad Misham B'Shalom. He walks down, he climbs down the palm tree, and he's fine, right? He violated the mitzvah of Shiloh HaKeim and did not suffer as a result. L'machar, the next day, Ra Adam Acher, She'ala L'Rosh HaDekel. He saw someone else go up to that same tree. V'natal Sabanim. Now, presumably this is a different nest, let's say, whatever it is. V'natal Sabanim, he takes the chicks, or maybe it's new Banim the next day already. V'natal Sabanim, he takes the kids, V'shilach Esa'im, and sends away the mother. And I don't know, probably maybe he did it not in that order. Otherwise, the story doesn't work so well. But let's assume he sent away the mother and took the chicks and just lav davka on the order. V'yarad mishav. So he did the mitzvah shiloh hakein. He comes down. What happened? V'kisho nachash. He gets bitten by a snake. Now, okay, so that's a major difference, right? The mode of death. Right, he didn't fall down, which you'd think, like, he's going up a palm tree, like, you know, you're waiting for him to fall. But no, he got bitten by a snake after he climbed down, and he dies, presumably from the snake's poison. Ah, okay, so that's maybe the biggest difference, right, between this story and the other one, is that there's no kibbutz aim here. So hold that thought, and we'll think about that more, and the relationship between kibbutz aim and shiloh hakein, and the role of parents and family here. But fine, he gets bitten, he dies. Amar, right, so Acher says, ksiv, shalech shalach asa'im, send away the mother, v'es habanim tikach lach, and take the children, lema'an yitav lach marach yamim, so that it's good for you and you live a long life. Eichan hi tovaso shalzeh. Where is the goodness for this person? Eichan hi arichus yamav shalzeh. Where is the length of life? Right, he died immediately. That's not a long life. How does this make any sense? It's explicitly against the pasuk, and right, this was leading him astray. V'lo haye yodea, he didn't know, shedrasha, Rabbi Yaakov lifanim mimenu, that previously Rabbi Yaakov had interpreted as follows, right? As Nedi noted, Rabbi Yaakov was, in this version of the story, is not his grandson apparently, but someone earlier, someone else before him. He had darshan as follows: Leman yitav lach leolam haba shekulo tov, varachta yamim leasid shekulo aroch. You'll get rewarded in the world to come, not in this world at all. So yeah, of course you can die right away and suffer immediately, right? Because you're going to be rewarded in olam haba, in whatever form, right? The world that's fully good and long. So it's not actually a problem, but he didn't know, Rabbi Yaakov, he thought the pasuk is talking about physical reward in this world, and that's why he had theological problems. That's what led him astray. So that's one version of the story. V'yesh Omer, another version, Al Yidei Shara L'shonosh Rabbi Yehuda Nachtom, right? Instead of Chutzav Seven Targumon, different name, similar idea, Nasun B'fiya Kelev, not in the dust, but in the dog's mouth, Shoseis Dams, dripping with blood, Amar zo Torah zo schara, this is Torah and its reward. Zeu alashon shayamotzi divrei Torah ketikunan. Zeu alashon shehayagav Torah kol yamav. Zo Torah zo schara, this tongue that's teaching Torah all the whole time, this is its reward. Dome she'ein matan schar ve'ein tchias ha'mesim. It must be there's no reward, and I don't know how he got this, this sort of throws it in. There's also no tchias ha'mesim, right? No one's getting a reward in this world, must be there's no reward at all, no tchias ha'mesim either. Right, so those are like two different points of fear, right? One is Hashem rewarding in this world, the other one is Tchias HaMesim. Yeah, it seems like a bit of a logical jump. It's a good question.
I guess, though, if he said to himself, maybe instead of in Tchias HaMesim, maybe it's more like there's no reward in Tchias HaMesim, because if he did think there was a reward in Tchias HaMesim, then he would have had Rabbi Yaakov Mistresha, so then he wouldn't have gone up. As in, he always had to
say yeah,
there's no reward.
I think you have to, the main issue has to be the lack of reward in this world, because he doesn't really have any access to the world to come. And this is some extension. If there's no reward in this world, presumably there's no Tchias HaMesim, which is, you know, Hashem's Ashkach at a different level or something like that. No, I mean, yeah.
Oh, yeah, no, I just meant, I mean, like, definitely he already was making some sort of conclusion about the Tchias HaMesim world, because if he thought there's no Tchias HaMesim in this world, but probably there's Tchias HaMesim in the world to come, then he would have had Rabbi Yaakov's Drasha. You know, as in, even in the Kugel and Kiddushin versions, he has to be making a statement about the next world.
Right? Maybe. I mean, there's different... Or you're saying, well...
And then even in those, he has to...
He might say, even if there is reward in the world to come, that's insufficient. The pasuk is wrong. It's kfir, right? The pasuk is wrong. And that's already kfir, even if he believed in the world to come. We're thinking about that, right? The connection between the two. Fine, so this is version one of why he went off the derech, version two, right? Version one was he saw the story with the person falling off the palm tree. Story number two was he saw the tongue of Yehuda Nachtom. And story number three, and again, these aren't mutually exclusive per se, V'yesh Omrim, Imo, Kishahaisa Me'uberes, but when his mother was pregnant with him, Haisa Overes, Albate Akum, she would pass by the houses of idolatry, V'hericha Me'oso Amin, she inhaled, she smelled that whatever incense they were burning there. That smell was somehow bubbling inside her body. Like the poison of a snake. Okay, so again a snake. What's going on with the snakes? And is there any connection between the first and the third story here? and just what's going on overall. Like, why of all things, Shiloh HaKein, right, no Kibbut Avayim here, Shiloh HaKein, this is what makes him go off the derech of all things, like you see someone get bitten by a snake. Like, why is that? Why is that such a big deal? So I think to help understand this, it may help to look at a couple of sources 9 and 10, a couple of sources, one we saw already, one not, about the nature of the mitzvah of Shiloh HaKein. So the Ibn Ezra there says, Leman yitav lach, right? You do Shiloh HaKein, it'll be good for you. Shashem yachmol alav v'yetiv lo. Hashem will have mercy on you and help you. Varachta yamim, kasher lo tichros kol HaKein, she'azavta ha'ikr. You don't cut off the whole species, the whole line of this bird family, mother and child. So you've preserved it, its life, or the life of that line, right? The mother could have other children. Hashem will reward you, just like you had mercy on that bird and did that. Hashem will reward you and not cut off your line, or not kill you before it's too early, let you live a long life. So there's a mida k'neged mida here, right? You didn't cut off this line of the bird. Hashem doesn't cut off your line. And it's based on this idea of chemla, of mercy. You have mercy on the bird, Hashem has mercy on you. Can leave aside the davening part of this, right? Al kan tzipor yagi rachamecha and whatnot. But that seems like even Ezra says, and this may be shot in the pasuk too, right? L'man yitav lach, right? You're nice to the bird and help the bird live longer. Hashem is nice to you and lets you live longer. And the hamik davar that we saw previously, right, lo sigach emal abanim. What's the tam of the mitzvah? Right, isi b'tam of mitzvah ki hu shilum gmul harachamim. You're rewarding the trait of mercy by keeping the mother alive. How so? The aim he biyacholta lifroach min haadam. The mother could have run away. Ach biksha lahagen al efrochim al abeitzim, and yet it stayed to protect her children. Al kein timaleit. You should let it live. Right, you should reward the mother for having care and love for her children by keeping her alive rather than killing her. So it seems like if you accept these two views, there's really multiple levels of mida k'neged mida, of scharva onesh, in the mitzvah of Shiloh HaKein, right? The mother protects her child, and for that deserves to be rewarded. She's rewarded by staying alive, and if you keep that mitzvah and allow the mother to stay alive, you then get rewarded by Hashem, v'arachta yamim, and you have a long life as well. And according to the Ramban, we saw maybe it also trains you to have mercy in other cases. So it's really interesting. There's like multiple levels of this reward, and it also often relates to a sense of parentage, right? The mother bird having mercy on the child. You have mercy on the bird, not that you're related to it, but you have control over it, and you yet have mercy. And then Hashem, of course, is Avinu Malkeinu, has mercy on us and allows us to live longer. So it's almost like a two-stage parental, in a sense, idea of mida k'neged mida. Now, in the Yerushalmi, in the third version of the story, the Yesh Omrim, what Achir's mother never properly did was to teach him the Derech HaTorah, the way of the Torah, which involves both ideas of Schar Va'onesh, right, which maybe idolatrous religions don't have in the same way, and maybe also the idea of Chemla, of having mercy, right? It was his mother. The problem started with his mother. So it's again... I don't know. I think chemla might be a particularly rachamim. It comes from the word rechem, right? It's a particularly feminine concept. So I'm not sure about that. But the failure seems to have started with his mother. And again, the role of the parent here. And by taking in this idea of avodah zara, it took things off base. And I wonder whether if we look at it, Hazinu, of all places. There's a comparison between Hashem as the mother bird. Kinesher Ya'ir Kino Al Gozalav Yerachef. Right? Just like a eagle or whatever a Nesher is, probably not an eagle, it has its nest, Al Gozalav Yerachef, the birds are on its wings, it protects its children. That's what the mother does, right? And as we saw, the mother gets rewarded, and that's why we save the bird. Hashem protects us like a mother protects her eggs. That's when we're fulfilling the Torah, as you see in Hazinu. On the other hand, if we continue on and we say Yizbichu LaShedim Lo Eloka, and we see people are, instead of serving Hashem, are doing avodah zara, then what happens? A few psukim later, it says Chamas Taninim Yenam, right? The poison of serpents is their wine. Verosh Pisanim Achzar, and the heads of snakes that are achzari, right, that are not merciful. It's the exact opposite. So the role that Hashem has towards Bnei Yisrael is one alternatively of the mother protecting the child or of snake and the snake's poison and achzarius, that sense of harshness, of meanness, lack of mercy. And that switch was flipped the wrong way by Elisha's mother. By going down the path of Avodah Zarah, Yizbechu Lashedim, Lo Eloka, she went down the path of, rather than Chemla, having mercy on the bird, getting rewarded for that, and repeating that process, right? And us emulating Hashem with mercy and giving the mother bird what it deserves, this mother, Elisha ben Avliya's mother, went off the wrong track, and not a track of Hashem as having rachamim, but Hashem as responding as the chamas taninim, with the serpentine poison. And that's mifapeh begufa ke'irsa shel nachash. The poison was in her body, like this avodah zar was in her body, like the poison of a snake, ke'irsa shel chachina, rather. And that's why in the story itself, what Elisha ben Avliya saw that sent him off, it was also the contrast between the bird protecting its child in the nest, being saved, being sent away, getting the reward she deserved. The person comes down and immediately gets bitten by a snake because within that worldview of Elisha ben Avliya, it had been poisoned, so to speak, and it was a world that didn't have scharva onesh. It was a world of achzarius. It was a world of chamas taninim yeinam, and for that reason, he looked at the world through those eyes and saw there's no scharva onesh. This is not a world worth where Hashem is involved, is helping, is saving people, and he threw it all away. So I think connecting those first and third stories work together in that way. Now, what about our Gemara? Our Gemara brings in another mitzvah, brings in, of all things, the mitzvah of kibud av v'em. Again, the connection of parents. And we're not going to have time to look at the Kli Yakar inside, but he mentions a very interesting idea in Source 14 that part of the goal of kibud av v'em is to train your own children to respect you if you respect your parents. That's part of the goal of it. And he says part of the goal of the mitzvah of Shiloh HaKein is also to train your children to respect you. Right? If you have so much mercy, even on a bird, so certainly people should have love and respect for their parents. So the connection here there is a significant connection here, if nothing else. And of course, the psukim both talk about Yitav Lach Harachas Yamim, etc. So that's one connection between those mitzvahs and why it would make sense that, you know, it almost would strengthen the question. This person's not only doing the mitzvah of kibud of Shiloh HaKein, but also kibud av v'em, which both have similar goals. Both have this goal of taking care of respecting someone. It would undermine that. And I think also in the Bavli, where we see that it's who taught the idea of schar mitzvah hayal maleka, the solution would have been if Elisha ben Avliya would have understood the teaching of his grandson. Of course, the grandson came later, right? He couldn't have heard it. But his grandson somehow has the solution. And in Source 8, in the Gemara in Chagiga, talks about Bito Shel Acher, his daughter, who comes to Rebbe and says, Rebbe, parneseni. She wants to be supported, right? Supporting usually is what a parent does. But she doesn't have a parent. Her father was Elisha, or Elisha ben Avliya. He's gone. And the response isn't, of course, we'll support you. The first response was, Adayin yesh mizaro ba'olam, how could there be any of the seed of Elisha ben Avliya, any of his descendants, still alive? V'aktiv lo nin v'lo neched ba'amo, v'ein sar b'megurav. And in the end, yarda esh v'sichzga safsalo shel Rebbe. The fire came down and burned, singed Rebbe's chair. A little hint that maybe he wasn't doing this right. And then he said, okay, he says, he admits his wrong, presumably he supports her, and says that this is true for someone who threw away everything, Elisha ben Avliya, that his family gets supported. Certainly it's true for someone who stays for him, so to speak. And I think we see in these stories the role of family, in a sense, overcoming the achzarius, the lack of schar mitzvah b'hai alma, and the lack of schar mitzvah at all that Elisha ben Avliya reflected. Because even though he threw everything away, we see in two different places that he didn't pass that on to his children. Right? You pass on things to your children. You support them financially. You give them food. You also teach them. And both both Acher's grandson, Rabbi Yaakov, was able to solve his theological problem, and his daughter was able to find support, of all places, from Rebbe within the Rabbinic Academy, and to overcome his own kfira, his own throwing away of everything. So I think if we properly understand both what we see from the Yerushalmi and what we see more broadly, there's this idea of the difference between a bird, a kantzipor, and a snake, of supporting one's children or not. And you go down the path of Avodah Zarah, your parents send you down that path, it's a real challenge. And one can end up throwing away everything and being bitten by a snake, so to speak. And yet, we also see the power of redemption. That even though Acher threw it all away, and everyone can do tshuva, chutz mei Acher, but Acher's own children, his own daughter and grandson, maybe it was even her son, we don't know, his own daughter and grandson are able to overcome that, both to re-enter the Rabbinic Academy in terms of support, maybe even be somehow under their tutelage, and to come up with the theological solutions to actually solve the problem that Acher himself saw. And I think the message here is, this is part of Hashem's chemla for all of us, right? The mother bird has mercy on her chick. We have mercy on the mother bird. Hashem has mercy on us. Not necessarily connecting those, because I don't want to run afoul of Homer El Kantzipor. But these are all important themes that we see here. And even, you know, even if someone goes down the path of the Chamas Taninim, of the poison of snakes, there still is always a way out, and to be embraced once again by the chemla, by the love of the mother bird and of Hashem. So that's my suggested reading here. Happy to take, I think there's some questions or thoughts. Why don't we start with Rina? Can't tell. Oh, you know.
Are the speakers plugged in?
Are you speaking? Yeah, we can't hear you. Is the sound off?
Try make sure the audio is on USB speakers.
Try again.
Hello?
Yes.
Okay, yes. Yeah. So my question is, I'm very interested in the source of, like, Elisha Ben Avui's family members, like his daughter, never heard of her before, and also the mother specifically. So I was curious to find out. I think you mentioned that the mother basically herself went off the derech, quote unquote. Is that true? I just wanted to clarify that. Was she basically a sinful person, his mother?
All I know is what it says in the Yerushalmi. And it says that because she passed by a base of Avodah Zarah, that somehow that spirit of Avodah Zarah entered her as the poison of a snake and poisoned her child. I was trying to give an account of what that would be. But that's the only explicit source we have in Chazal about that. I don't think it says anywhere that she, you know, didn't keep halacha or anything of that sort.
Okay.
Yeah.
Uber
Sheiricha, right. It's last year, right? Last summer.
Again.
There we go. Right. Oh, it doesn't say she, well, I guess she was pregnant at the time, right? Oh, you're saying Heiricha. Yeah, that's interesting. This is a different sense of Heiricha, right?
Yeah.
Wow. I wonder if you could tie that in. Very interesting. Okay, yeah.
Just like a comment and a question, if that's okay. Just like I think the part of the story earlier where he's going to like the different Bati Knessios and like talking to the young children there could like fit well also, because it's sort of like he's being taunted by like these like young children who are like learning Torah and like maybe he didn't have that kind of like, and like that when they like their psukim like really hurt him because they were saying psukim basically that his like that you can't do teshuva, and like, but that's like also hurting him just because it's like maybe hard for him that he didn't have that.
Interesting.
And then also I was just wondering, like, the way that the Gemara makes it sound of, like, had he heard Rabbi Yaakov's drasha, like, he would have been okay. But it's sort of like, if what was motivating Rabbi Yaakov's drasha was that, like, he saw the same thing that Elisha ben Avuya saw, and it seems like, or Rabbi Yaakov's able to see this event and say, okay, this contradicts my theology must be wrong. Whereas Elisha ben Avuya saw it and said, like, it's all, like not, I need to re-understand it, but I need to just, like, leave it and not believe it. So it's like, it's almost like too charitable on Elisha. Like, because then it makes him seem like a very tragic figure, like, had he only known. But it's like, it's not really so tragic because, like, Rav Yaakov saw the same thing and, like, actually, like, made this, like, drasha of it. You know what I mean?
Yeah, no, you're very right. The fact that they started off in the same place, more or less, and went in different directions shows that Elisha ben Avuya had an alternative path. But I don't know if that makes it less tragic necessarily, meaning it could be that, you know, sometimes it's really hard to pick the right path, and we should have the proper rachmanis on the leash of an avuya. And maybe you could also say, possibly, the grandson, only after seeing where his grandfather got it wrong, was he able to get it right. That's another possibility, right? It's not, they're not directly parallel. One follows the other, which you have some interference from that. But yeah, very interesting point. Yeah, Tamar.
You could also say maybe if you go down the route of like framing the story as like, you know, the theme of like families and upbringings, it's like Rav Yaakov, you know, he kind of had this perspective that was, you know, ingrained in him from whatever his surroundings, his upbringing, being around the right people. And like he had this like, you know, I guess like perspective, and Elisha, like, maybe it's not that he didn't hear it necessarily, but that like he couldn't see it. Like he was in this situation where like his perspective was tainted, and like he couldn't, you know, he couldn't get himself out of this way of seeing things, where he was just not seeing the drasha of Rav Yaakov.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah, right. Not everyone always sees the same way forward, even if it's there, right?
Yeah.
100%. Okay.